All right, welcome to the Universe International Podcast. My name is David Vranikar. I'm the international student reporter for Universe, and we are joined today by Dr. Derek Beach, who is an associate professor in the political science department at Aarhus University. Dr. Beach is originally from the United States, so we are going to chat with him today about the upcoming midterm elections, which will be happening next week back in the States. Dr. Beach has written a few books about international politics and too many articles for me to name, so we thought he'd be a good person to sit down with. Dr. Beach, thanks a lot for taking the time to chat. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
Good. Well, you were a commentator for Danish TV about the U.S. elections back in 2008, and now, again, you're still in Denmark for this next election cycle in 2010. What's it been like for you to follow the elections happening in the States from Europe?
Well, it's of course much easier than it used to be with the internet and stuff, and you can follow local media. So really the only real difference is that you don't get the kind of man on the street, talking with people, every day. That's the only real big difference, I think.
What are some of the major trends that you've seen emerge in the last couple years since Barack Obama won the 2008 election? What are some of the major things that you've seen that have kind of built up and that are going to be decided upon now next week and with this next election?
Well, I think the major thing to focus on is the what's called the Great Recession. That this has been the defining kind of focus of the Obama legislative agenda, and it's also determining these elections. These elections are all about people that are upset that the recovery has not happened as quickly as perhaps they had dreamed of, but given the deep depth of the recession, it's perhaps not surprising. So what I see is a lot of people that are angry and upset, but it's a natural reaction when unemployment is at 9.6%. So it's not like there's new political forces that have all of a sudden appeared and are mobilizing people. It's more that people are upset, and there's a, for example, the Tea Party is one of the most interesting stories here. But people are not choosing the Tea Party. People are this election is all about voting against incumbents.
Mm-hmm. A lot of that resentment or that anger about the economy was that helped Obama probably in 2008 when he could point to the incumbent politicians and the current politics as a reason why the economy was doing so poorly. Do you think it's a lot of the same sentiments that helped Obama in 2008 are now coming back to go the other way?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's his problem now, and it's the incumbent's problem. Even though there's perhaps not that much he can do, and he has done. The stimulus package, for example, was a major piece of legislation, about $1 trillion of federal spending. But it's his problem now, so he has to react to it. I mean, it's a very similar situation to what Ronald Reagan was in the 82 midterms, where the economy, Reagan came in, among other things, because the economy wasn't doing very well. Carter also had some foreign policy problems. Reagan came in and presided over 2 years of terrible economic developments, high unemployment, and got a kicking in the 82 midterm elections. Lost the House of Representatives. And I think this is a very similar, once you're the incumbent, it's your problem.
Think that Obama, in a sense, was doomed to see this kind of blowback in 2010, or do you think he could have done things differently? Or you talked about the depth of the recession. Was this bound to happen?
I think this was very predictable. You know, when you look at the size of the crisis, the scope of it is really the only thing you can compare it to is the Great Depression. Also, the way it's hit, especially in places like Nevada and certain areas of California, with massive foreclosures, very high unemployment. These are trends that we really have only seen in the Great Depression. And it's in these circumstances, you know, the last 50 years of U.S. political history and voting patterns says that in situations where the economy is doing really bad, you're going to vote against incumbents.
It's one thing that Republicans in particular have kind of railed against is the healthcare legislation that went through. Do you think that the healthcare bill that Obama pushed really hard in his first year in office, do you think that that's really much of an issue, or like you said, is this really just about the economy?
I think there are things in the healthcare bill, especially the mandate to buy healthcare, that if you're uninsured and you do not buy health, if you don't buy insurance after I think it's 2014, you're actually going to get fined. Mm-hmm. This is something that grates a little bit in for many Americans. That the state can go in and force you to have healthcare insurance. So that of course was problematic. But if you want to have all the benefits of the healthcare reform, things like that they can't deny people with pre-existing conditions coverage, for example, you have to have the mandate. It's part of the package. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you should exaggerate the impact that what Obama has done is affected his popularity. I mean, any president with 9.6% unemployment is going to get hammered.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Tea Party a little while ago and how that's kind of been, I don't know, maybe a manifestation of some of the frustration that people are feeling. How do you understand the Tea Party as maybe different than Republicans, and what sort of impact do you think that the Tea Party candidates are going to have next week in the election?
Well, of course, the Tea Party is probably what we're all going to remember this election for, but at the end of the day, I think in just 2 or 3 or 4 years' time, when nobody's going to remember what the Tea Party was. I mean, the Tea Party is this kind of loose internet-based movement. Hyped by a couple people on especially Fox News like Glenn Beck and a couple media figures like Sarah Palin, and when you try and get into it, it's very difficult to see what it actually is. I mean, there's no physical manifestation. You know, there was a rally recently in D.C., but they don't agree. I mean, you would have what are traditionally kind of hardcore libertarian, you know, the state should more or less not exist. Everything should be private enterprise. Those kind of libertarian views, which are closely linked with say big business, less regulation, lower taxes, etc. Those are ideas that have been in the Republican Party, especially the business wing, for you know, decades. You can go back to the 30s and find, like, the Liberty League, a fraction of the Republicans that were advocating these kind of libertarian views, you know, supported by big business. And then you have the social conservatives that have somehow found their way into this. And it's a very strange grouping, and what we're seeing is in these primary elections that the, you know, just take an example, somebody like Christine O'Donnell in Delaware or Sharon Angle in Nevada, with a very strong libertarian agenda, and coupled with a very strong social conservative, you know, anti-abortion, anti-gay marriage, anti-Islam, and that they have been able to exploit this anger and kind of anti-incumbency feeling and cast themselves as the political outsider. It's a protest. It's not a signal that there's a all of a sudden a large portion of the American electorate that supports these views. Mm-hmm. This is a fringe position. Again, hyped by Fox, organized on the internet. But I think it's really a flash in the pan. And then if a Tea Party candidate tries to run, for example, for president in 2 years, they're going to get crucified.
What do you see happening with some of the quote-unquote Tea Party candidates who look like they could win these elections next week? There's Joe Miller in Alaska is currently leading. You mentioned Sharon Engel in Nevada. She's leading right now. Jesse Kelly, an Arizona House of Representative candidate within the margin of error. There's other candidates. What's going to happen if they ride this wave of resentment into office? Are they just going to become run-of-the-mill Republicans, or are they going to try to exist outside of the Republican orthodoxy? What's their impact going to be if it actually happens?
Nobody knows how they're actually going to behave. I mean, if you look at somebody like a Tea Party candidate that's already sitting, somebody like Jim DeMint from South Carolina, he's clearly said that he's not going to follow the Republican leadership, and if he gets a whole contingent of Tea Party people in, you know, they're going to be loose guns. But I think that's not going to be the major, you know, that's not going to be the major impact of them. I think the major impact has already happened, and the major impact has been that in 2 years' time, from now until the next elections, any Republican, any moderate Republican that actually wants to do something and cooperate with Democrats and enact legislation that is at all controversial, they're not going to do that. Because what they're going to be afraid of is they're going to be afraid of somebody like what happened to Mike Castle in Delaware. You know, a relatively moderate Republican that had worked in the House, he had voted for several Democratic bills. He wanted to run for the Senate, and he was everybody's favorite. A Tea Party candidate came in and said, you know, if this guy works with the Democrats, do you want him? And the primary voter said, no, we don't want him. We want you. We want a Tea Party person that's not going to work with him. So what the impact it's going to have, it's going to pull it was the whole House, all the Republicans in the House, unless they have very, very unless they have very, very moderate districts, more obviously Democratic leading districts that they're sitting in, and also Senate candidates, it's going to pull them to the right towards obstruction, and it's the effect has already happened. It's going to make Republicans less willing to compromise.
Mm-hmm. So it could. I mean, we've seen with the healthcare legislation, and then with other things, how partisan the politics in Washington are right now. You think this could make it even more so?
Oh, it definitely. I would say people that are following, you know, Congress in the daily grind close to Congress are warning that we're going to see government shutdown, which means that within the next couple months, once we get a new house, that there's not going to be any agreement on the budget. And when the federal government doesn't have a budget, it shuts down. So we're most likely going to see a replay of what we saw in 1995 when the Republicans, under Newt Gingrich, shut down government. This is probably a good thing for Democrats if history replays itself, which it, of course, not always does. But if Republicans come in and think that they have a mandate from the people to be obstructionists, that's not what they have. So they're most, but they will think that they have a mandate. So they're going to most likely overreach, shut down government, and Obama, in 2 years' time, along with the Democrats, are going to be able to go to the next election and say, listen, these people, they don't have any solutions to any of the problems. All they can do is say no. They shut down government, etc., and portray the Republicans as extremists.
You mentioned 2012. What, I mean, it might be impossible to say, but what do you see if there is the expected Republican influx, if they take over the House of Representatives and if they bring the Senate closer to 50-50, I think it's currently projected to be like 51-49 or something. Yeah. If these things happen that people think are going to happen, what do you think is going to happen in 2012 with the presidential and congressional elections? And do you think, again, it's just going to come down to the economy?
Well, we know that there's a very, very strong relationship between how the economy is doing and especially, for example, in a presidential election. You know, the presidents that have been reelected have all been reelected in periods where the economy is doing well. Mm-hmm. So that's a given. If the economy is doing relatively well in 2012, other things equal, we would expect Obama to be reelected. I think it's that simple. It also depends upon who the Republicans put out there. If they put out an extreme candidate, then they're going to get slaughtered. Again, if the economy is doing well. If the economy is not doing well, if we still see high unemployment, if we still see massive foreclosures, I think Obama is going to probably be a one-term president, even if he has, in his first term, been one of the most productive, as far as passing legislation, one of the most productive presidents we've seen, perhaps, since Lyndon B. Johnson.
You've written extensively about European politics and international relations. I'm curious what effect you think a surge in Republicans in government might have on U.S.-European relations. It seems like Barack Obama is a pretty, at least the way I understand it, he's pretty popular in Europe, and I was wondering if you think that a surge in Republican voice in Washington would have any impact on the way that the U.S. and Europe interact right now?
Not really. The way that there's two places where I would say changes in increase in Republican representation in the House and the Senate can impact on foreign policy. The one is funding. House of Representatives funds the budget, and among other things, of course, foreign policy. So they can make life difficult for a president who wants to undertake foreign policy to get funding. Perhaps Afghanistan or whatever will be funds will be cut. And the second thing is, of course, treaty-making powers, where the Senate has to, but that's a supermajority anyway, that's 66. So if it's more 50-50, that's not going to matter, because the Democrats haven't had 66 votes anyway. For example, if the president wanted to do a new, you know, a climate treaty or something and sign it, he's not going to get it ratified by Congress or by Senate anyway. So that doesn't really matter. And I would say for Europe, it's a huge under the water issue. It's so vital. The economic relationship between the United States and Europe is so important. I mean, the U.S. And the EU are each other's biggest trading partners. This is something that goes under the water, you know, under the waterline. It's not something you notice. It's just something that works and happens. Mm-hmm. And there's such huge amounts of money involved in it. It's such a mutually beneficial relationship. Nobody wants to rock the boat. So you're not going to see. You're not going to see House Republicans pestering the administration on questions relating to the transatlantic relationship at all.
What's going to happen on Tuesday? The current forecasts today on the Wednesday before show that it's looking like it's going to be maybe 230 or so Republicans to about 200 Democrats in the House, which would be a swing of the majority. And then in the Senate, like I was saying earlier, it's probably going to swing closer to 50-50. Do you agree with these projections? Do you think that this is kind of the way it's going to pan out, or are we in store for some surprises here in the last week?
Prediction is always very difficult, and I haven't done my own simulations and stuff. But from the analysts that I trust, you know, are saying pretty much the numbers that you're talking about: mid 40s for the House, a swing, you know, 45, 46, 47 on the House. 6, 7, 8 in the Senate towards the Republicans, but there's always, especially in the House races, there's always going to be some surprises, and the big thing that we don't know this election is there's, I would say there's two things. Of course, turnout. We just don't know this. It looks like the turnout might be higher than it usually is, and this could be a good thing for Democrats. Mm. Given that Democrats usually don't show up in midterms. So the more people that show up, we would expect more to be Democrats. That could also pull the other way, though. It could be all the Democrats are staying home and all the Republicans are so fired up about this that they all go out to vote. So it's very fluid. It's looking like there's a lot of media attention in comparison to what there usually is about a midterm. So I would think turnout's going to be higher, but which way that's going to go is one thing. And the second, of course, is these Tea Party people. Is Sharron Angle too extreme? We just don't know. I mean, at the state level, a lot of these polls are so poor that they're not worth the paper they're written on. Mm. They're not scientific, let's put it that way. They're an analyst that's sitting there and guessing. Mm-hmm. Calculated, educated guessing. So, given the fluidity of the situation, you know, it's very difficult to say it's going to land right there. It could go, you know, plus 10 one way or the other on the House, for example. Given that we know so little about the polling. But I think the size of the economic crisis tells us that the Democrats are going to get a hiding. The question is simply I heard a really good comment about it, comparing it to a hurricane. Everybody knows that a Republican hurricane is going to hit. The question is it a Category 3 or a Category 5? A Category 3 would be like an 82, moderate losses. Or is it going to be a Category 5 where maybe the Democrats will lose 60, 70 seats? Mm-hmm. We just don't know right now.
Well, Dr. Beach, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat and breaking down the election for us. It's been a pleasure, and thanks, and we'll keep an eye on what happens.
All right, thank you.